Going to continue from yesterday. We finished chapter 13. We're going to begin. Excuse me. Finished 13. We're going to begin 14. And the title of the chapter is Pregnancy of Diti in the Evening. And we'll begin with text 1, read several verses. Shukadev Goswami said, after hearing from the great sage Maitreya about the Lord's incarnation as Varaha, Vidura, who had taken a vow, begged him with folded hands to please narrate further transcendental activities of the Lord, since he, Vidura, did not yet feel satisfied. Ati Chiptaha Na Ati Chiptaha. Tripti is to satisfy. Feel satisfied. So, when do you feel satisfied? At some point you left, so you must have felt satisfied. Sri Vidura said, oh, chief among the great sages, I have heard by the septic succession that Hiranyaksha, the original demon, was slain by the same form of sacrifices the personality of Godhead, Lord, bore. Purport. Interesting purport. As referred to previously, the Bore incarnation was manifested in two millenniums, namely Swayambhuva and Chakshusha. In both millenniums, there was a Bore incarnation of the Lord, but in the Swayambhuva millennium, he lifted the earth from within the water of the universe, whereas in the Chakshusha millennium, he killed the first demon, Hiranyaksha. In the Swayambhuva millennium, he assumed the color white, and in the Chakshusha millennium, he assumed the color red. Vidura had already heard about one of them, and he proposed to hear about the other. The two different born incarnations described are the one supreme personality, Godhead. Text 3. What is the reason, O Brahmana, for the fight between the demon king and Lord Bore, while the Lord was lifting the earth as his pastime? Text 4. My mind has become very inquisitive, and therefore I am not satisfied with hearing the narration of the Lord's appearance. Please therefore speak more and more to a devotee who is faithful. Purport. One who is actually faithful and inquisitive is qualified to hear the transcendental pastimes of the appearance and disappearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vidura was a suitable candidate to receive such transcendental messages. Text 5. The great sage Maitreya said, oh, warrior, Vira, the inquiry made by you is just befitting a devotee because it concerns the incarnation of the personality of Godhead. He is the source of liberation from the chain of birth and death for all those who are otherwise destined to die. Report. The great sage Maitreya addressed Vidura as a warrior, not only because Vidura belonged to the Kuru family, but because he was anxious to hear about the chivalrous activities of the Lord in his incarnations of Varaha and Nrisimha. Because the inquiries concerning the Lord, because the inquiries concerned the Lord, they were perfectly befitting a devotee. A devotee has no taste for hearing anything mundane. There are many topics of mundane warfare, but a devotee is not inclined to hear them. The topics of the warfare in which the Lord engages does not concern the war of death, but the war against the chain of Maya, which obliges one to accept repeated birth and death. In other words, one who takes delight in hearing the war topics of the Lord is relieved from the chains of birth and death. Foolish people are suspicious of Krishna's taking part in the battle of Kurukshetra, not knowing that his taking part ensured liberation for all who were present on the battlefield. It is said by Bhishma Dev that all who were present on the battlefield of Kurukshetra attained their original spiritual existences after death. Therefore, hearing the war topics of the Lord is as good as any other devotional service. One of the challenges that Prabhupada had to address, given the time and circumstance, especially given the time and circumstance, was the sensibility prevalent during at least the beginning parts of his writing and his preaching and his giving of Krishna consciousness, was the anti-war sentiments. The anti-war sentiments were prevalent in the world, certainly prevalent in the young Western devotee group or audiences, peace and love, and so. Yeah, but it's not just during that war time. It's a principle that people feel should be valued. How can a spiritual person advocate war? Or how can the personality Godhead advocate war? So scholars, I haven't read any of those scholarly criticism of Krishna, but Prabhupada would refer to it on a regular basis, that scholars would criticize Krishna, that he was inducing Arjuna to fight. So Krishna's bad. I mean, they take the trouble to read Bhagavad Gita and conclude Krishna's bad because Krishna was inducing Arjuna to fight. And so Prabhupada said different things about that in particular. One of the prevalent things that he said was Dharma Yuddha is fine and the other kind of Yuddha, Adharma Yuddha, is not fine. But even Dharma Yuddha, people that don't have a transcendental sense of Dharma don't like Dharma Yuddha either. You know, pacifists or you know, the Gandhi movement or Buddhism, and you know, that's great. Prabhupada would explain, it's not the Gandhi movement that drove the British out, it was the military drove the British out. They were very powerful. He gave, you know, the whole, his understanding of history is pretty fascinating. So I forget the name, but the group of warriors that defeated the British, and on and on. The British were using the power of the Indian army to defeat other people so they could extend their kingdom, and on and on. So his point is, they're always, because of the nature of emotive passion and mode of ignorance increasing identification with the body, and then this body and that body or groups of people, there will always be war. The notion that there should not be war is it's unrealistic. So it doesn't mean don't promote a peaceful way of living together, but to say flatly there shouldn't be war, or to say flatly Krishna shouldn't be inducing Arjuna to fight. Because why was Krishna inducing Arjuna to fight? Dharma Yuddha. And your unreligious principle, this is part of the Bhagavad Gita argument, if Arjuna was to neglect his duty, that would be adharma. And he would suffer the consequences of adharma, because he was trained and qualified and duty-bound and his nature to give protection according to the principles of dharma. Over and over in Mahabharata and Ramayana, the execution of the power of a kshatriya had certain protocols, and it had to be according to principle of dharma and not otherwise. So when there's principle of dharma, it's to be done. So people, they're persons that don't like that. Krishna is bad. So, don't read Bhagavad Gita and don't follow Krishna because Krishna is bad. What to speak of Krishna's behaviors in Vrindavan with the gopis? So that's irreligious. So without understanding the purpose of dharma, and without understanding the transcendence of the personality of Godhead, persons make judgments based upon their moral compass. Fighting is bad. Unless it's according to religious principles, and then it's not only good, it must be done. So the advocacy of Krishna to Arjuna was dharma. And his dharma was yuddha. So dharma yuddha. If one doesn't understand what is dharma and the purpose of dharma, they just trash dharma and have their own idea of what's good and not good, what to be done, what's not to be done. Trash dharma and make your own. It's not an easy, because we're conditioned, it's not an easy pill to swallow. Religious fighting is to be done. I don't know if you've ever had this similar reaction that I had. When narration of Krishna's pastime during Vrindavan are going on, and when the point comes where Krishna kills the demon, the audience goes, "Jai!" I don't know exactly what the thought process is to the devotees that go jai is, but what we're getting in the purport here is Grandfather Bhishma's utterance. Those persons not only were freed from the reactions of their sins, but because they were killed in the presence of Krishna, they attained their original spiritual form. Not just wipe their slate clean of karma. Kind of like, according to dharma, according to Manu Samhita, death penalty is good for the person who has committed murder or such a serious crime, because it neutralizes the reaction. But neutralizing the reaction doesn't mean they achieve their spiritual form, it just means the slate is wiped clean. Without reference to the Vedas, the debate can go on endlessly about what's to be done, what's not to be done. Just a little sharing. In all religious traditions, or the ones that I'm familiar with, there's something that happens when a child reaches teenage. In the Jewish faith or something, in the Islamic faith or something, in the Christian faith or something, in the Vedic tradition or something, to like, you know, what you learned when you were little, now you're in the teenage stage, are you ready to commit to that which you learned when you were little? For boys, it's, you know, Upanayana. So, in Vedic tradition. In the Christian tradition, it's called confirmation. So there's when you're little, there's baptism, and then when you're a teenager, do you want to keep going? So when we were teenagers, in the church that I grew up in, we had a confirmation class. And they gave us as an assignment to discuss capital punishment, yes or no. And it went on for 2 months, and the conclusion was, we don't know. I mean, some people were saying yes, and some people were saying no, and no consensus, we didn't know. So I just kind of parked it. And then became introduced to Krishna consciousness, and then the answer was very clear from Madhva Samhita. Yes. Once it is confirmed that someone has committed such a thing, a crime of murder, it relieves them, capital punishment relieves them. Because that's a good thing. So, supposing that doesn't happen, then in this life, the karma will linger, and the final chapter of Canto 5, description of the hellish planets, there is, of the 28 hellish planets that are listed, 14 of them are the consequence of people doing violence to other living entities. And it's not a nice place. And not just one of the lower seven planetary systems. It's below the lower seven planetary systems, the hellish planets. Now, it doesn't last forever, but it's very severe. So what's to prevent someone from having to experience that? Well, one of the life principles, according to Vedic Dharma, is capital punishment in this life. So, who understands that? Not too many people understand that. Why capital punishment should be enforced. There's other hellish planets. If a head of state punishes somebody wrongly, there's another hellish planet for them. Another category of hellish planets. And so it's not a nice thing. The hellish planets are gruesome. So war is not a good thing. Killing people is not a good thing. It's a bad thing. Dharma yudha is a good thing. It's to be done. If given that one has the capacity, the training, the psychophysical nature, etc., to be done. Now, specifically, we heard this little introduction, there's two varahas, and the saving of the earth has been described. Now he wants to hear the other one, the killing of Hiranyaksha. So why does he want to hear? This is Vidura. And Maitreya, why does Maitreya want to speak it? Why does Vidura want to hear it? Who is interested? The message we're hearing is hearing about mundane war topics. It goes on all the time. Like, all the time. People don't like it, but they hear about it. They want to hear about it. It's in the news. and people like to read the news because they like to hear about it. It's marketable. Or, you know, action movies. Very popular. Action movies means violence. It's just a nice way of saying violence. Action movies. And guns and violence and violence. And why is it? People like it. People make those films because people like it. They like to watch or experience or whatever it is. It's horrible. And violence produces violence. That sound vibration produces more impressions and more of this propagating more violence. Then it just escalates and becomes, you know, dreamy Star Wars and violence. But Dharma Yuddha and Krishna, so it's of the same, this is the message. Krishna's activities, whether they're this or that, they're of the same nature. You know, like the critics of Krishna and his pastimes with the gopis. But for Sahajiyas, that's their favorite. It's their favorite because they don't see Krishna in transcendental way. They see Krishna to be like a better version of themselves, and then they imitate Krishna and go and do what Krishna does because Krishna does. You can like authorize, and it's like it incites their sensual appreciation or attraction. That's offensive. But what's the right understanding? Why a saintly person, Vidura, wants to hear? Or why any saintly person? Why is it in the Bhagavatam? Because, like, you know, we're not interested in mundane wars. Not interested in mundane violence. It's repulsive. We're interested in these topics because they're liberating, which is what's being said. Whatever Krishna, whatever's in the Bhagavatam, dharma projita kaitavotra paramo nirmatsaranam satam. The Bhagavatam, from the get-go, eliminates, kicks out the other types of so-called dharma, cheating religion, which is a contradiction of terminology. That which deprives the living entity of the purpose of life. It's kicked out. But you know, there's all kinds of description of worldly things, apparently worldly things, like the universal form, which is a material form. So why is there a discussion of material form? Because we want to go spiritual. So why is it there? And it's not just, you know, a little bit, it's a whole bunch in the Bhagavatam, because it's one of Krishna's forms. So it's not only of interest to us, but it helps us understand Krishna's spiritual form. To understand how to navigate our way through this world helps us understand how to behave in the spiritual world. Makes sense. And it's how the system works, because it's connected with Krishna. So dharma helps connect us. The purpose of it is not just good conduct versus bad conduct, is to connect us with Krishna, qualify us further and further. Not just for piety, dharma, artha, kama. That's not the purpose. There's this ultimate purpose. Dharmasya, hi apavargasya. The purpose of dharma is apavarga. Apavarga means beyond liberation. A pavarga. You've heard this many times, I'm sure. Pa, 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 ma. Pavarga. I'm not a Sanskrit scholar, but Prabhupada said it so many times. So, pavarga, that's this world. And within, in five declensions. And a pavarga is beyond the material world. And dharma is meant to attain that which is beyond the material world. It should never be performed. Dharma, Bhagavatam's statement, dharma should never be performed to achieve material opulence. And then the second half is, and if material opulence does come from performance of dharma, it should never be used in sense gratification. It should always be used in the service of the Supreme Lord. Because from piety comes fruits of piety. So when fruits of piety come, you deploy that in service of the Lord. That's the purpose of dharma. Not to get piety so you can get, you know, artha so you can get kama. That's not the purpose. Completely rejects that idea. Bhagavatam. There's a, some many years ago, there's a devotee who's no longer practicing Krishna Bhakti who confided he really liked the idea that you become a devotee and somehow you desist from devotional service. You go to the heavenly planets and you enjoy for a long time and then you come back again. You can do start up devotional service again. He said, that's what I want to do. I plan to leave devotional service after some time because I want to go to the heavenly planets. It's like, you know, passage to Swarga. Do a little devotional service and skip out. Now that's offense. But, you know, some people have some mindset like that. Devotional service is seen as something material. It's something to get you piety. There was a college student that told me it took him 1 year to understand that the devotional service wasn't to get piety so he could do better in school, and then better in school so he could get a better grade, so he could get a better job, so he could prosper. He started because there was some regular program on campus, an Indian young man, you know, prestigious university. And he said it took a whole year. I was going to Mangalarti every morning at the center. And I was thinking, this is great. It's going to help me get some piety credits. And with piety credits, I'll do better in school and I'll get a better job and I'll prosper. Because that's what he learned from when he was little. You do religious thing because it promotes piety and would promote prosperity. Which is true. It's true. The piety produces fruits of piety as much as sinful produces fruits of sinful. Karma is, you know, both up and down. But that's not bhakti. It took him a whole year to understand, hey, there's another purpose. And then there's a recalibration, a reorientation towards the higher purpose. So there's reminders in this little section of the merit of hearing pastimes of the Supreme Lord, including pastimes where there's killing. It grates against worldly sensibility. Indradumna Swami told this story. He became a devotee, I think it was in Detroit, and his mother was thinking, oh, he'll get over it, but he didn't get over it. So she came to visit the temple in Detroit. And when she came in, the first thing she saw was a picture of Lord Nrisimhadeva ripping apart her Anikashipu, and she stood there and looked at the painting. This is your religion? Yeah, I can day. How to understand that if your sensibility is within the purview of bodily identification and what is good and what is bad and he didn't say what his response was, he just said that was her take. So and it's not just Indradyumna Swami's mother, it's, you know, people in general don't have, scholars don't have, they criticize Krishna, they misunderstand the transcendental nature of Janma Karma Chame Divyam. So all of those activities, they're Divyam. Including the language, it's right in the Bhagavatam, including the language of the Lord's creation. That's one of his leelas. Normally, I'm accustomed, at least, to think of leela as a transcendental pastime that he does in the spiritual world and sometimes performs here. That's leela. But creation is also a pastime. Interesting. So in hearing, it's a theme in the Bhagavatam, hearing such topics, that's the topmost thing. Now, behaviors and activities and the orientation of our lives and making our day-to-day decisions of things should be in alignment with that transcendental destination and so forth. That's where it gets a little sticky. But the activity itself is ultimate beneficial. And then come the alignment of everything else with that ultimately beneficial. A couple other points, it's, you know, Maitreya is honoring Vidura as being faithful and thus a fit recipient of these transcendental messages. Supposing somebody's faith is not so strong, kind of like a beginner, and then they hear. So they shouldn't hear. Only when you know the bell rings, you get a 10, then you can hear. That's not the method. The Bhagavatam is for Janata Agha, even for such persons, simple persons, because its message is very powerful. Now, we should be discriminating about which topic we present to which audiences, but because they may make further offense due to clouded conception, but that in general, the principle of hearing is good. Vidura, going back to text 2, Vidura mentions he, through disciplic succession, has already heard. He is asking things about what he already knows, at least information-wise, but he wants to hear not just information, he wants to hear the realized presentation of Maitreya, because he recognizes Maitreya as being what he is, pure. And how did Maitreya become pure? Through hearing. Because when it's mentioned, when Maitreya came across Krishna speaking to Uddhava, he was an elevated person, but not a Mahabhagavata Vaishnava. But by hearing from Krishna speaking to Uddhava, he became a Mahabhagavata Vaishnava, just by that process of hearing. No. He was already very qualified, so it was like dry wood, igniting dry wood. But he then became ignited wood by hearing from Krishna. So whether we're wet wood or dry wood, the hearing process is good, so that we can ignite and become qualified through the process of hearing attentively, trying to understand, to taking the message into our hearts, trying to live our lives accordingly as best we can. Purification. Any discussion? Go ahead.
The discrimination part about doing this sharing this transcendental science, especially in colleges, especially where sometimes Middle Eastern students come and they want to try the meditation and then...
You want fragmentation?
Meditation.
Meditation.
Yeah. And then they take Bhagavad Gita and then sometime after they come back and then they'll start asking questions about karma especially. Why do you believe in karma? Like, I haven't done anything, but I suffered a lot. Their suffering is very graphic. So I tried to give some more time, but then I wanted to tell the truth also. So I just tried to put a point that, are you willing to leave a violence-free life? You know, like meat eating. They're not ready for that. But they say, like, if God is all good, like, why did He make us suffer? That same question. So, how do I take them?
Depends on the person. That's my blanket answer. Depends on the person, what they, where they are, what they're capable of hearing. Because my thought is going to something that you feel they can relate to. You may have to explore a little bit to find out something they can relate to. But when they're, you know, what is their consequence for violence? Without, take it apart from animals, just is there consequence for violence? Is that just that there's violence and there's consequence for violence? Is that, you know, in the state and under, you know, laws of nature, is it just? Is it unjust or just? Someone did. So then supposing, you know, is there violence involved in taking the life of another living entity? Unnecessarily, particularly. And in a higher evolved consciousness living entity as opposed to. So, and if there's violence, is there justice to have some punishment for violence to other living entities? Is there violence involved in the taking the life? You may not do it, somebody else may do it, but you're partaking in the product of violence. So it depends on the person, what they can relate to. If they're like, you know, I don't remember. Well, it says, what about today? Is there violence involved? And is there going to be, is it just that there's consequence to for violence? So, depends on the person. Depends on the person. Just coming to mind, I had this experience one time riding from one place to another place. It was from New York to Chicago, and seated next to me was a Cornell University student heading home from New York to somewhere. Columbia University in New York City. So bright, etc. Sharp, well-mannered. Some conversation started. What are your views on? So, do you accept Christ? because she had a Bible in her hand. And it wasn't like she was going to save me. She just wanted, you know, she was curious. And so it got to the topic of taking the life of animals. And, you know, she went from beginning to end, whereas, you know, it's not spoken against, and the kind of like the wild card in there was somewhere in one of the New Testament books, Book of Peter or something, where one cannot be judged, one cannot be unqualified for the mercy of Christ if one eats wrong things, or something like that. It doesn't say, that's not how it's said, but that was her argument. So the bottom line for me was, being a Christian means you please Christ. That's what being a Christian means. Now, supposing you're a Columbia University student, you have, you know, affluence and capacity and discriminating power and so forth, and Christ is holding a lamb, and you ask him, can I have the lamb so I can kill the lamb and eat the lamb? Is that going to be pleasing to him? Because the essence is not what it says over there in the book of Peter. It's pleasing him. You're not prohibited if you do that from the mercy of Christ. But is that pleasing? Think about it. I don't know where it went after that, because again, the flight was over, but depending. The steps are: understand where they are, go to where they are, show that you're not going to like dismiss them or judge them or something, and then give them, prod a little bit to go out of their comfort zone, to think of something that can help them think out of their comfort zone. Ask them to be thoughtful. So rather than telling, you invite them to discover. And then, you know, it's fine that there's some scriptural authority, and you say, this is what scriptural authority says. And to me, this resonates. But that's not the starting point. Something else? Yeah.
I have two questions. One, when killing of the demons are narrated sometimes, we're hearing Ramayana, killing of Virada and so many demons, and it says that this demon indicates this anatta, so by hearing that, you know, the anatta is removed, that kind of, sometimes narrated without indicating that. So, and hearing itself has a potency that if I don't know what that demon indicates, and just hear, does it have the same effect?
Yes. Supposing there's a small child that takes Krishna prasadam. And then there's, you know, an adult that takes Krishna prasadam. They understand what it means that it's Krishna prasadam. Does that have the same effect?
So, but if I know that, okay, virada indicates inattention, and I'm hearing with that mindset, okay, so I'm so inattentive to hearing, then that helps me more?
Yes. It's a potency that helps lift you. Just hearing the pastime. Yes. Something else? Okay. Should the girl call the female? Yeah.